Hello, kiddies. I am the G-Man. That is Deb. Welcome to another Midwest Paratalk Radio live in full effect. Why am I all cockeyed? Don't say that out loud. Don't answer that.
Am I still fuzzy?
No, you're good now. That was very weird. We're having some technical difficulties
I didn't even change the settings. I just opened it up and looked at it and
I don't know.
That's bizarre.
It's weird. It is. How bizarre.
It's that eclipse energy everybody's talking about, which makes me chuckle when I hear that.
Man, I'm so tired of hearing about this eclipse thing.
Me too. I mean, it's going to be cool, and it's on my 29th wedding anniversary, so that's extra cool. I thought it was my 30th. Right. It's only 29. It feels like 300 though. But anyway, and it's cool. I won't be alive for the next one, I'm pretty sure, because it'll be a while. And so this is my last chance to see it. And I live in Kokomo, so it's like, they had an article in a couple different major newspapers that online. The town that's split in half by the eclipse, and our Kokomo literally is going to be split in half. My side of town, which is the southeast side of Howard, of Indiana, of Kokomo, we're going to be in totality only for about 45 seconds or so, but we will be in totality. But like right down here at the corner where the Meyer story is going north will not be in totality. That shit is going to be weird. And I want to go and take a picture of that line of totality because I'll be standing right there.
So what I don't understand about it, and I'm no rocket scientist, of course, but if it's dark 6 inches to the left, it's dark 6 inches to the right. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, you would still see it. You would still be affected by it.
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah, I don't either.
The line is pretty stark, so I don't know how that'll work. But it'll be interesting. I'm not a rocket scientist. I don't know anything about it. I just know it's cool. And I think all the energy that people feel, and they blame it on the eclipse, it's the human energy that they feel because everybody's all ramped up about it. Everybody's jazzed. They're all excited. Jesus Christ, they're expecting 500,000 people to come into Indianapolis between the Motor Speedway and the Children's Museum. There's festivals all up and down the path of totality all through the Midwest. Tons of festivals. I think that eclipse energy that some people think they can feel is actually human energy. People just, are excited about it. And that's cool because it's a cool thing. It'll be my first total one.
We're in totality.
Yeah.
This whole area. So, I mean, I'm going to be working. So as long as it doesn't mess with my internet, I don't give a shit. You know what I mean? I'm stuck in the house anyway. So
it's not going to do anything to any of our stuff. It's just it's no different than it just turning night out. What we might notice, I don't know if you guys have bugs outside yet, and bug sounds. We don't really have them up here yet much. It's still been kind of cold. So, but I know I've read, and there was a partial eclipse here back about 30 years ago, maybe. Mm-hmm. When it started to get dark, the birds started their nighttime. You know how bird songs right before the sun goes down?
Oh, yeah.
The birds started that, and we started hearing bug sounds, crickets and whatnot. But that didn't last very long. Well, it wasn't a total eclipse then. I know it was in 1994.
We had one here right like 6 to 8 months before we actually moved down here, maybe a little longer. Because we had to come down here for Deanna's job. I drove her. And it was a partial eclipse of the sun because it got dark on 69 going into Evansville. But it was, It was like you'd put your sunglasses on and that type of shade to everything.
Yeah.
And
it's wild to watch the shadows change so quickly in front of you. You know, you can almost see it. The shadows changing right before your eyes. It's really cool. And the way the light changes, it's a weird kind of light. It's hard to describe, but it's going to be a really cool event. But, you know, and I got my glasses. Dave was 6 months. As soon as he found out that it was going to be total here, he's off to the internet buying these glasses, getting them from the science place so he knows they're actually like iOS certified or whatever.
Bless his heart.
You don't actually need them at the moment of totality, but you need them before and after if you want to look at the sun. If you don't want to look at the sun, don't worry about it. You know, just sit in your lawn chair and look at the ground and watch it. We've made these little things during the last partial eclipse out of some shoe boxes that we poked holes in.
And the shit we used to do way back in grade school.
And you could see the little crescent in the box, a little crescent of light, and watch as the moon passed in front of the sun. That was cool. But
right. Yeah, we did that in grade school at one of the whatever type of eclipses we had at the time. I don't remember, but and it was a big oh my God, don't look at the sun. Don't look at the sun. Don't do it. Look to this box.
You really don't want to look at the sun. Where did you go?
I was drinking my water.
Oh, okay. Anyway, what might be interesting is, you know how I am about solar storms and the geomagnetic storms and solar energy, solar flares, all that jazz, and the effect that I believe that it can have on a paranormal investigation, right? Mm-hmm. I think when there's a geomagnetic storm rolling, as well as the regular thunder and lightning storm with a lot of energy in the atmosphere, it makes for interesting, you know, sometimes more active places when we investigate. What I'm curious to find out is, and I'm not going to do it, but it would be cool if somebody else was doing an investigation or something during the eclipse, which the whole thing is totally not a couple hours, you know, from beginning to end. And again, not that it's really having that much of an effect on the physical planet with the physical act of, you know, just moving in front of the sun, other than maybe, you know, temperature changes and stuff, but the energy that's being thrown out there in the universe from all the people that are so jazzed over it, you know, I wonder if that will have an effect on things.
I don't know, but I can tell you if it does 2 days prior to the eclipse.
Oh yeah. You, what are you guys doing?
We're doing a house up in Huntingburg, just south of Jasper, for you guys that know the area.
Huntingburg. I don't think I've ever heard of that.
Huh. It's between Jasper and Evansville on 231. And we've been there once. We're taking the whole crew back this time though, for Saturday night. Cool. And we're going to take some juniors with us and have them learn how to do the DVR system, the old DVR system, and all that business. So it's going to be a decent time, I think, for them to learn and for us to gather more evidence. I've gone through, only had like 5 files on the Zoom, and everybody was using the Zoom, which is really weird. I don't know why there's only 5, but they're 1 hour and 20 minutes long, for the love of God. You know, I mean, anything past 20, I got to pause it and take a break. But it, I pulled a butt ton of EVPs from this location. A couple of digital anomalies, and I've got some of that, those DVR files. I know I talked to you about, maybe if you wanted to take a look at them when you found a little bit extra time and needed something to do. I've got those up on the Google Drive. So we still need to go through that. And then we're going to compile. We're going to have 8 cameras in the basement and 8 cameras on the upstairs and the outside. So I'm going to have a whole butt ton more of video and audio to go through, but I had some pretty compelling EVPs. A couple of them, what's this? Come on.
Maybe it's that eclipse energy. I don't know.
It's a PEBCAC error.
What's that mean?
A problem exists between the keyboard and the chair. I heard that.
That was my stomach.
I heard that. I'm telling you, man, I'm my EVP god.
I am so sorry.
I pulled one. Let me tell you about this. Oh, you're fine. I was like teasing about it. this one EVP that we got, which was crazy. The link is in the subject page, bro. Are you kidding me? It's right there. It's right there, Forrest.
Shut up.
Don't run, Forrest. Don't run.
Get it, dang Forrest. I'm trying to send him the StreamYard link you sent me, but it just puts 18 million things in the...
Slowly roll. I got it.
Okay.
For Peter, Paul, and Mary.
You fix that.
but I had this, we had this new investigator, right? And him and his wife, they joined the team. And he's a contractor. At Gmail.
You emailed it to him, right?
Yeah, this is the second time. Send anyway. No subject. I just sent the link. I sent the link in the subject line. But he's talking about the basement and had moisture and whatnot in it, right?
Yeah.
And he was telling Billy about it. And you can hear an old man's voice go, "Who's he? F him." As clear as day. I was like, man, that is some cool.
What did it say?
It said, "Who is that guy? Or who is that? F him."
Oh, cool.
Some old crotchety man's voice. And then I got a lady's voice. "Hey, Forrest is in the house. I'm going to bring him on stage with us."
Yeah. Welcome back, Forrest.
Hey, Forrest.
Thanks. Sorry I'm late.
No,
you're good. Worries.
We're just happy you're here.
I'm happy I'm here.
I was beginning to think if you were going to do your Ozarks, is that next weekend?
Yeah, that's next weekend.
That's what I thought.
Oops, where'd you go? Oh,
where'd you go? There you go.
There he is. So well, I might have hit the keyboard by mistake.
Oh, that, what do you call that again?
That is called a PEBCAC. That is a problem exists between the keyboard and the chair. Right. And I happily did it.
You must be a computer nerd.
I am. That's what I do for my real job.
Yeah, that's the only reason you would know what PEBCAC means.
Right. But real quick on that investigation. Mm-hmm. This past weekend or whatever, and one of the EVPs that came out was Felicia and one of the other ladies were talking, and they're ending the EVP session and they're going back up to base camp, and an old woman's voice screams, "I am not nice." And I was like, all righty then. Mm-hmm. I'll be sure to make note of that and not bother you anymore.
That's funny.
But so welcome back to the show, Forrest. And
thank you.
Looking forward to talking with you this evening. Deb mentioned the Ozark thing. What's going on with that?
Well, as the Ozark Mountain UFO Conference, it is year 36 for the conference. There's only one conference, I think, out there that's been going continuously longer, and that's a MUFON symposium.
Okay.
So it's next weekend. What is that? The
6th.
No, not this weekend. It's the week after that. Sorry. Next week.
Is it 12th, 13th, and 14th?
Yeah. Yeah. Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
In Eureka Springs, Arkansas. I would highly encourage anybody nearby to come to it. I think it's one of the best conferences ever.
Absolutely. And there's a vibe there that just I've never felt at any other conference. I don't know if it's the location or the people or combination of the it's just one of my favorites. It's my favorite. That was the very first one I ever went to by myself. And my entire family drove down there for that first time. And then they invited me back on, I think, their 30th conference. Their race invited me back to speak there. And it was so much fun to go back and see it. And I saw Forrest, and we went to the Crescent.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Greg, you would love it. I mean, you and you're not that far away from
it. Yeah, it's a fantastic conference. It really is. And just the town is full of all these cool, eclectic galleries and art shops and craft shops and really nice restaurants. It's just like it's an art community in the middle of Bubbaville, Arkansas. I don't know.
Yeah.
And so it's really bohemian. You know, the history, the hauntings, there's springs all over the place. It probably sits on top of some big giant crystal deposit.
Probably.
Yeah. Cause it's a weird and wonderful place.
Yeah.
Is there a waterway that goes through there, a river or lake or.
There's streams that go through there. And then there's probably like 60 natural springs in town that people used to go back in the day and sit in them for health reasons. And there's a big impoundment. It's a dammed impoundment just outside of town called Beaver Lake. But it's a huge lake. So
I would almost guess that would probably be a limestone or quartz deposited area. Theory has it that type of rock and water kind of conducts a spiritual energy that sometimes spirits can feed off of. So yeah.
Well, crystal. I mean, we used to grow crystals in the clean room here at Delphi in Kokomo when we built chips, and they used them in the, you know, so crystals are used for communication and, you know, we used them on the circuit boards, all kinds of stuff. So I would like to go down there, and they have done the places down there where you can like find your own geodes, you know, and crack them open. I would love to do
that. Would be cool.
You know, and I really want to go back there again and hang out with Forrest at the Crescent Hotel.
Well, that was good times.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, go to the big creepy hotel with creepy people and
yeah, baby.
get all our toys out and
yeah.
That was a lot of fun. Well, I think all those orb pictures I showed you came from two trips down there. One of them was with you guys, and then some of them were whenever we did the ghost tour with some of my buddies. But yeah, there's weird stuff happening there every day. So
the last time you were here, we were running out of time, but you had a ghost story you wanted to share with us that you said it was one of your best. And I've been thinking about it ever since.
Yeah. It's a, you know, you saved the best for last, and then we ran out of time. So
I know. Right.
Right. So, traditionally, I haven't been a ghost chaser, even though I that makes no sense with all the other weird stuff I'm into. But I've had ghost experiences off and on throughout my life, and mainly just sort of being in the right place at the right time, I guess. And then also, you know, I'm not shy of getting up off the couch and going chasing something weird. So this story, it kind of goes down that vein. It was when I was 18 or 19, and I had been dating a girl And then we broke up and stayed friends. Like, I went away to college, so we just quit dating, but we stayed friends. And I was had also become friends with the rest of her family. And they bought this historical piece of property in Edwardsville called the 3 Mile House. So for you history buffs out there, Google 3 Mile House, and you can verify everything I'm going to say about it. So they bought this place, and it was in pretty bad shape when they got it. It was a huge two-story brick. Technically, I guess 3 stories, because the attic was bigger than most houses I've been in. Brick building that was 150 years old, and they set out to renovate it. And they turned it into a restaurant, and they lived upstairs in part of it. And then ultimately, within a couple of years, they also opened the basement up and turned it into a lounge with a really nice bar down there. Well, the history of this place is insane. It's the Historical Society of Edwardsville verified that Abraham Lincoln had slept in this house a number of times. In fact, whenever I went up there the summer they were renovating it to help them hang drywall and stuff.
Cool.
And, the bed that he slept in was still in that house when they bought it, and they came and took it and put it in a museum. And it was the center for the Underground Railroad in the Midwest. So slaves escaping from the South to the North could stay there and hide there. So there are tunnels underneath this place that went out into the countryside for hundreds of yards that could house 200 or 300 people underground in these tunnels at any given time. And so that was the Abraham Lincoln lived in Springfield, Illinois. He would come down to St. Louis to try cases. This house was basically half the distance between Springfield and downtown St. Louis. So it was a good place to stay. So it was a hotel, bar, brothel, police station, you know, all tavern, you know, all at the same time. It was sort of this utility building. And so people would spend the night there on their way down from Springfield to St. Louis, right? So this place was haunted as all get out. I don't even know how else to say it. So after they renovated and opened it, I used to work in some restaurants. So they hired me to be the manager of the wait staff. So I was in charge of the waiters and waitresses. And what that meant was that 4 days a week, I was in there at midnight counting out the register while everybody was covering up the tables and getting ready to go home, you know.
Yeah.
And there was literally not a week that went by. And so I did that. I worked there 2 summers in between going to college elsewhere. And there was not a week went by that something strange did not happen in this house. So I have a lot of ghost stories just about being there. Okay. But the best one is this one. So Lori was the girl's name that I was friends with there. She had a friend of hers that was very sensitive and psychic. And she knew that Lori knew that I was into all this weird stuff. And so when weird things would happen, she would call me up and go, "Hey, you know, a ghost woke me up last night and was talking to me." And I'm like, "Oh, cool. You know, what did they say?" And so I kind of got pulled into all this weird stuff happening there, aside from the stuff that was happening, you know, that I would actually see when I worked there and the stories people would tell. So one night she called me up at home, and I lived in Granite City, Illinois, which was a half an hour drive away. She called me up one night and said that this particular ghost was bothering her, was like trying to get into her head, and asked if I could come up there. And so I'm like, okay, like, it was before everybody had cool ghost toys. I didn't know what I was doing, right? Other than, you know, this friend of mine called me and said, "Come up here and help me." And so I drove up there 10 o'clock at night, right? And there was a little, sort of little dining room off the main dining room that you could book for small parties. And Lori was in there with her friend, who was the very sensitive psychic person. And so we stayed in there, and she was telling me these things that had been going on. And there was a well-known, well-documented ghost in the house called the Lady in Black. Okay. And she had been seen for years, and there's a history that tells who this woman was, and that basically, as the story goes, she went there and caught her husband there with a prostitute and killed them, and then went up in the attic and hung herself. And damn. So there's documentation of this event happening, and she was dressed in a black dress when all this happened, and then when people would see her ghost, it would be black, you know. So the Lady in Black.
Yeah.
And so apparently this particular ghost had been tormenting Lori for nights, waking her up and getting in her dreams and all kinds of stuff. And so she was coming apart. Okay. And so I'm sitting there, and she's telling me all of this stuff. And so I'm like, you know, the crazy paranormal go-getter. I'm like, well, let's go confront her. Right. We got to go talk to her. We got to go confront her and find out. Maybe she just wants to tell you her story, and, you know, things will be better after that. And so, like, I convinced them that we should go up in the attic. Now, going up in the attic in the creepy 150-year-old haunted place, right?
That's right. Kind of, yeah.
That's the kind of stuff I do.
Right. So
I ain't scared.
We go marching upstairs, and we're going to go up in the attic. And so, of course, I'm leading the way. The two girls are trailing behind me. And you would go up one staircase, and then you would turn and come back toward, like, the front of the house. And then there was the door that would go up to the attic, right? Yeah. So we come up the stairs. We come over. And as I'm about to round the corner to open the door to go up to the attic, the door opens by itself.
Okay. Come on in.
Yeah. And so right. I'm standing, like, you know, right there, and the door is right here. It opens not 2 feet away from me right here. And this dark figure comes out of the door and walks right in front of me. And it looked like a shadow you could still kind of see through it, but it was pretty, pretty dark and very distinct outline, like a detailed, you know, outline of a female wearing a dress, like a formal kind of a, you know, hooped, you know, dress from the 1800s or whatever.
Wow.
I mean, you could, like, oh, she's got, like, long hair. I mean, you know, it was detailed. Yeah. Just walks right in front of me and then goes through. There was a doorway right there that went into a dining room that was right next to the staircase. Went into that dining room. Well, in the meantime, Lori freaks out. Okay. She's like grabbing her head, going, stop talking to me. Get out of my head. Oh my God. Oh my. And she runs and she goes down to the other end of the staircase there and goes in the other side of that dining room. So they're on a face off with the ghost at one end of the dining room and her at the other end of the dining room facing each other. And she's going crazy and the ghost is looking at her. So I'm like, okay, now what do I do? Right. So, you know,
right.
Being the chivalrous sort, I'm going to try and stop this ghost from harassing my friend, right? So I did this thing that I had read about or whatever, where I imagined, like, a ball of light, okay, of energy, and then I projected it at the ghost. So I'm visualizing this, you know, and then I, you know, do one of those kind of things. And
like your tea.
Pop this ghost with some energy, okay? And the ghost just goes, and this looks right at me, okay, when I did that, and did something. And I just, like, every muscle in my body went completely weak, and I fell to my knees. It's like I couldn't even stand. It was just like all the energy was just drained out of me in an instant. Like, you know, I got shot with something. And I fell to my knees, and I was like having trouble catching my breath. And the ghost turns back and is looking at Lori, who's still going crazy. So I do it again. I muster another, you know, energy ball, and I project it at the ghost. And she turns and does this to me again. And I'm like, oh, geez. So I'm like, pulling myself up on the railing of the stairs. And I turn to her friend, who's the psychic, who this girl's standing there next to me. And she's out of it. She's like looking like,
oh, Lordy,
like this. And she's like jabbering. And she's
being possessed.
And I go over to her and I'm shaking her. I'm going, are you all right? Are you all right? And she's just like, it was really weird. Yeah. So in the meantime, after the second time I did that, it basically, I think it broke the ghost concentration. And so Lori came back around and to where me and her friend were there against the railing. And I'm like, come on, we got to get out of here. And so her and I take this girl arm in arm and we lead her down the stairs because she's just out of it. We go back into the little dining room and we're sitting there. And so her friend comes around and is like, okay. And we're like, what's going on? And she goes, it's really weird because like this side of my face feels ice cold. And this side of my face is like burning up. And we're like, okay, well that's weird. But she was better. Now she was acting normal other than she was having these weird sensations still. And so we start trying to talk about what happened. And Lori all of a sudden goes, wait. And she's like, she sort of goes bye-bye a little bit. And I'm like, what's going on with you? And she goes, she's talking to me. And it's like, what is she saying? And she's like, she's telling me about the night that she died. She's telling me about the night that she killed her husband. And so I'm like, let her tell the story. Don't stop it. Let her, And so she kind of sits there and is in this semi-meditative state for about 10 or 15 minutes and kind of like nodding along and saying like, yeah, oh, I'm sorry. And, like she's having a conversation with this entity or whatever. And then it was over. And everything seemed okay. So it was like the air sort of like cleared. And for a long time after that, she had no experiences with the lady in black. There were no sightings. There was no nighttime weird stuff going on. And we thought, oh, cool. She left.
Yeah.
Turns out that wasn't true. But much later, I think it was probably a couple of years later, a whole bunch of weird stuff started happening again. And this was after I didn't work there anymore and I was off. Getting married and going to school and getting a job and all that stuff you do, And so she wasn't calling me up, having me come up there anymore, but I did hear about it later because I did meet up with them again years later when I was real involved with UFO investigating stuff. Because as it turns out, she had a bunch of weird UFO stuff happening too, and her dad. And so there was like one night when sort of all hell broke loose in the place to the point where she said, we literally just threw some stuff in a suitcase and ran from the place and never went back. And they took this thriving business that they had and they just sold it to somebody else. And like, we're never going back in there again. And within a year or two of them leaving and selling the place, it burned down.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Burned completely down. Like it's not like they left this old brick shell. It burned so bad they tore it down and now there's just a flat grassy area where the building used to be up there.
Wow.
What
was the circumstances of the fire, do you know?
I don't.
Uh-huh. That would be
interesting. Yeah, I mean, it was still a restaurant, so
grease fire, electrical, something like that.
Sure, it could have, yeah,
that's but, wild.
Yeah, it was crazy stuff, I tell you.
I would almost be interested in going back to the location, even though it was burnt down, and try running an EVP session or setting up some kind of cameras and trying to do an investigation on the lot. Because I can guarantee it's still haunted.
Sure. Well, here's the thing. One of the main entrances to get into the tunnel network, because it was secret, was there's a cemetery right up the road, maybe not a quarter mile away, where there's a gazebo in the middle of the cemetery. There used to be a hatch in the middle of that gazebo. So at night, escaping slaves could could go through that hatch and get into the tunnel network in that cemetery. And there were at least a couple of times when there were a bunch of people living in those tunnels waiting, you know, to be able to move on. And a disease swept through there and killed a bunch of them. And I believe that they were all buried in mass graves in that cemetery. So,
oh, wow.
So when do you want to go? I got some new toys to play with. I want to go.
I know.
Right.
One of the very, very first places that came to my mind was to go up there. And if nothing else, go to that cemetery, but go to that place. Because what's interesting about it is right next to the property where the 3 mile house and the parking lot was, is a house. And I've known a couple of different people over the years that knew the people that lived in that house, and every one of them had crazy ghost stories to tell about ghosts coming through their house, which was right next to the property.
And what city is this?
Edwardsville, Illinois. It's just outside of the north side of town. You come down here, we'll go. Okay, I'm telling you.
Are you still?
Hell yeah.
In the same place that you used to be before you moved away? Are you in generally the same area?
No. I'm living in St. Louis now. In Baldwin is the township or whatever, which is on the west side of St. Louis proper, out in St. Louis County. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Edwardsville's about a 40 to 45 minute drive from me.
We'll have to put our heads together and do something, Greg.
Yeah, let's look at trying to do something this summer.
Yeah, definitely, for sure.
I'm definitely not kidding about that.
Oh no, I'm not either.
Here, let's go.
I haven't done a lot of investigating for a long time. I got the itch real bad, and but I'm also particular about who I go with also. you know what I mean? Me and Greg have been doing it together for 15 years, and we got kind of a system that works for us, and we get some really good stuff.
I would love to learn from you guys.
I'd love for you to be there.
I've got a science background, you know my mind.
This dude's a genius, man.
I would love to go out with some experienced folks like yourselves and
I've kind of done the you know how when I used to be an investigator for MUFON, right?
Yeah.
One of the things that we were at least in Indiana, we're looking for the explanation. We're looking for the, you know, the prosaic reason why these people see this stuff. And you know, most of the time we can find something if we look hard enough. If we investigate like we're supposed to, you know, we'll find some prosaic, you know, explanation for whatever happened. I transfer that to my paranormal research as well. I don't, you know, as soon as I hear a knock or a bump, I don't automatically go, I'm flipping out. If our K2 meters, our EMF meters start throwing off, we start looking for plumbing and wiring, you know, and things like that, because that does it. A lot of young groups don't do that, but we know better.
Well, you've got to debunk before you can move towards trying to prove.
And then you get EVPs like the ones we've got, holy.
Well, I mean, I've got an entity yelling, "I'm not nice," and another one saying, "F you." So, I mean. Well,
might be time to go.
Oh,
yeah.
go further in. I did get another one from this last investigation, real quick, Deb, and said they liked pickles too.
For real. And I've been watching other investigators on TikTok. Some of them really have good ideas and seem like pretty smart folks. And I watched one the other day and I sent it to Greg. This is a question that we're going to need to start asking during our EVP sessions. What year is it? Not necessarily. Yeah. I sent that to you too, because they answered like in the future, and it make me think, you know, Hype said, I got a feeling that a lot of the stuff that we capture, whether it's, you know, EVP recordings or, video or whatever, I don't think it's a ghost like what we would call a ghost. I don't think it's ever lived here. I don't think it's dead. I think it's existing somewhere else, and we just happen to tap into it for a moment, you know. And that's
I think that's where my UFO
stuff comes into play, because I feel the same way about it.
Well, I think a lot has to do with the circumstances, because this last investigation that we did, it is completely her relatives at that house.
Well, yeah, sometimes
you know what I mean.
Oh yeah, look at the investigation that we had with Astrid. And we got an EVP of the woman, an old woman's voice that said, "Is that you, Astrid?" or something like that. And come on, Astrid is not a very common name in these parts.
No.
And the minute Astrid heard that, she goes, "Oh my God, that's my grandma's voice." So, I mean, yeah, but I mean, maybe that just confirms to me that when we die, we go to another dimension. We don't, you know what I mean?
And what if we're thinking about this entirely wrong? Because you have the categories of residual, and you have the categories of intelligent. Okay, what if we're looking at it wrong and residual is the actual apparitions left here that are still imprinted on time but can still have an intelligent response and interaction, whereas the intelligent haunts would be dimensional?
I don't know. Nobody really knows for sure. That's the exciting part.
True.
So I feel like that means I'm just as smart as the rest of y'all, because I don't need a PhD or anything like that. I've just got, you know, 65 years of living to back me up. I've been around for a while, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, I'm not kidding, Forrest. We definitely got to hook up and do something together this
summer. I would love for you guys to come over here, and because not only we'll go out and we'll do the 3 Mile House, but the Wiley Theater in Edwardsville is known haunted place. It's been on some of the ghost shows, and I'm pretty sure that a couple of phone calls and we could get in there and do our stuff too. Because all my friends that I hang out with, Debbie, you've met all those guys. They all live either in Edwardsville or Troy or in that area right there. And so they know a lot of the business owners and, you know, that sort of thing in the area. And so we could, I think we could plug in with the Wiley Theater pretty easy too.
Oh, I could drive my happy ass right on over to Greg's house. And then Greg could drive us the rest of the way to your place, because he don't like the way I drive.
I'm not riding. I love you, Deb. You are the bestest. You are not driving me anywhere. I will Uber. I will literally Uber all the way there. Versus, I've been in the car with you,
dude.
I can just say.
Do you remember the time that me and Joe Wolf came down to your place for the weekend? I brought Joe with me, and I was driving that 5-speed, and we got stuck in Edinburgh on the I-74 for like 6 hours, and I had to pee. And you guys were worried about us where we were. There was some big traffic jam. Literally, we were like at a dead standstill. I remember that. I was driving then. It was a 5-speed.
She is bad luck. When she gets behind the wheel, she is bad luck.
Yeah,
I have never been in a car with her.
Don't.
We drove down to
don't.
What was that?
Bobby Mackey's.
Bobby Mackey's is a pretty famous haunted bar down in Cincinnati or Ohio?
They're in Kentucky. They're probably about 45 minutes from Cincinnati.
We went down there for an investigation. I mean, and Bobby Mackey's has been on all the Ghost Hunter shows and everything. So, and we went down there, we drove down there, and I had a brand new car that had like 10 miles on it. And I'll be damned, that something didn't break down.
Jeez. Well, when we were there, it wasn't even like halfway, quarter of the way. Mm-hmm. We were actually in the parking lot of Bobby Mackey's when it broke down.
When it died.
So we're in Newport, Kentucky, which is backdoor nowheresville. And Deb's flipping car quit working.
Wouldn't
and I'm like,
start.
Well, that's a long walk home.
Yeah, it wouldn't start. Holy. Everything was locked up on it. All the electronics were locked up on it and everything. It wouldn't start. Yep. So we went ahead and went in and did the investigation. And I kept thinking, how in the hell are we going to get home? We'll have to tow this thing all the way back to Indy. this is going to suck. Right. And, you know, all this stuff. And I was almost in tears when it was over with. We were getting to the car and I was ready to cry. And I'm like, let's just try it one more time. And I was praying to the Lord. And I don't even, I'm not even religious. And I'm like, please, let's just start.
And that bad boy fired right up.
Started, turned right over like a brand new baby. And we drove it home. Turns out it was a short in the fuse box. And Ford made it right, but boy, that was exciting. And Greg, you know, kind of burned him.
It sounded like something was messing with you.
I felt like something was messing with me for sure. Because
you know, they say that Bobby Mackey's was the portal to hell, and it was, you know, demonic activity and this, that, and the other. Not at all. We never found one inkling or iota clue of any kind of demonic.
No.
I mean, it was haunted. Don't get me wrong; it was haunted, but it wasn't. There. Yeah, it wasn't near as dark and despaired as what they were portraying it, especially like when the Ghost Adventurers went there and freaking Zach Gaggins was like, oh, I'm possessed. Oh, what a tool.
Just whatever it was, like peeking at women in the bathroom.
And like peeking at the guys in the men's room, too. I'm just going to tell you.
I got peeked on. It just felt kind of weird. The door kept opening, and I'm like, excuse me, I'm in here.
That's funny you should say that, because there was some of that going on at the Three Mile House also.
Really?
Like one place where you could almost always hear voices was in the bathrooms, and it was the men and the women's bathroom were situated right in the middle of the house, and you know the heart of the house is always a weird place. But they were situated right in the middle of the house, so you know all the plumbing was right there. Didn't matter which one you went in, but I can tell you countless times I'd go in there and I'd be standing at the urinal and it would just sound like 12 people were having a conversation that, you know, you could hear in like in your head. It would just be like, and distinct different voices and it was all the time. And customers would come out of here and go, I heard voices in the bathroom. Yeah. Yeah. You know, so that happened a lot. And then there was one ghost there that we nicknamed Herman. I don't know why. Just he was a big guy, and we nicknamed him Herman. And he liked the waitresses because he would talk to them in their ear while a crowded dining room, and they're trying to take somebody's order, and he would talk in their ear and call their name, and it'd be loud enough where they would turn and go, what? And the people at the table would look at the waitress like, are you okay? What's the matter with you? Nobody there. Right.
I've had something blow in my ear. Like, as you know, it's almost like I'm moving and the wind blows by. But no, I'm not even moving. It's blowing in my ear. It's like somebody giving me a wet willy with air or something. So I've had something blow in my ear. I've never been scratched or any wildness like that. But I had my hair played with, my hair, and blew in my ear and stuff like that.
I did have an investigator get scratched on this last investigation.
Oh yeah,
that's crazy stuff.
Yeah, I don't like that. That's it.
It depends, though. I mean,
some of that shit hurt.
He didn't even know it until we saw it.
Really?
So, yeah. So, I mean, scratch me, slap me, pinch my ass. I don't care. Just let me know you're here. I mean, I'm here to find something. Let's get after it, you know?
So, Forrest, you're also interested, you know, you were in MUFON in Illinois for many years, right? And you were very interested in the whole field of the whole subject of UFOs and stuff, too.
Right. This was actually the first time I've ever talked about ghosts.
And, you know, I find that interesting, though, because, you know, you're getting the bug like I got it. You know what I mean? Getting interested in it and being pulled in it. You know, I'm wondering how many other people out there like that. Like you said, that the lady that was having one of those, the lady had also had UFO stuff, the one you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, her and her family did. I interviewed them later, you know, years later, got in contact with them again. And they had a bunch of UFO stuff going on.
So are you still interested in that? I mean, I know you're MCing at the Ozarks, but are you doing any more research about UFO stuff or?
Well, I've never stopped really. It's, you know, yeah, busy. I got young kids again.
Yeah, you did it. You did that whole thing twice, like my mom and dad did. They had Kathleen, yeah. And then, you know, 12 years later, they had another whole generation of family.
Right. So I've done very little, if you want to call it, field investigative work mm-hmm. in the last 20 years. But I'm constantly, you know, reading and researching and watching videos and trying to stay in touch with people. And so it's never too far, you know, from whatever I'm doing. So,
well, I think UFO investigators and paranormal investigators are kind of, if you think about it, the same. We're both looking for the same thing. We're looking for the answers. We're looking to try to find more information and research. The unknown is what drives us to do what we do.
Yep.
Try to get that. So, I mean, if you're, I wasn't necessarily interested in UFOs before I met Deb, of course, but now I'm as intrigued with that side of the paranormal as much as I am doing paranormal investigations. So, I mean, I think it's good that we can have this mix of investigators from the UFO side and the paranormal side, and we get together. I mean, that's a dangerous combination for whatever it is we're hunting.
Yeah.
I mean, well, you know,
I think that the phenomenons overlap. When I say that, I don't mean that aliens are ghosts or that ghosts are aliens, right. But aliens are the preponderance of evidence for the last, I don't know what, 70 years that we've been investigating this thing sort of in a structured way. The preponderance of evidence suggests that they're interdimensional more so than they're extraterrestrial. And then if you apply that model to what we know about the physical universe from a physics standpoint, knowing full well that they're not going to fly, if they are extraterrestrial, they're not going to fly from there to here through linear space. We're not considering that same idea. I mean, it's hard enough just to get to Mars. We're not really going to try and fly to Alpha Centauri. Right, you know, right. Ridiculous, because we know that, you know, theoretically, we know that we can move through space time, you know, in a different way. So I like to present this scenario to people to sort of like, well, it's like, well, some of them are probably obviously extraterrestrial. Well, yeah, but the way they act is very interdimensional. So think of it like this. Here's a civilization on another planet, and they've developed technology, and they go, oh, Earth looks like an interesting place. Let's go check those guys out. So they're not going to fly here through linear space-time. So they pop out of this dimensional reality, and they pop back in it here. I go through an Einstein-Rosen bridge or a whatever mechanism you want to, you know, call this time-space portal that they come through. So now they pop in here, and they fly down, and they look at us down here on the Earth, and they go, hey, those guys are screwing the ozone layer up pretty bad. Think we should tell them? Yeah, okay. So the other preponderance of evidence is that communication is almost always telepathic, right?
Right.
Almost always telepathic. So they telepathically communicate with somebody down there on the ground going, hey, by the way, you know, you guys are screwing up the ozone layer, you know, with your freon and all that stuff. You ought to knock that off. So now what do you have? You've got an extraterrestrial, interdimensional, time-traveling channeler.
Yep.
Okay. Because if you travel through a wormhole or an Einstein-Rosen bridge or some kind of a isolation field that takes you out of this time-space reality and then back in, you are by its very nature also traveling in time. Okay.
Yeah.
So you've got all four things, and that might be happening more often than than not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So even your nuts and bolts aliens that land in the backyard and leave a burn mark, Debbie.
For real, because that little egg-shaped thing that was in the yard, there's no way that those six little child-sized fellas could have gone in that thing and flown across the galaxy to some other planet. There's no way.
It works like that.
I don't think it is either. You know, 40 years ago, we called it a ship for lack of anything else to describe and call it. And I didn't know what it was then. I don't remember going in it. I don't remember coming out of it. But I do have memories of other places where I've gone in and it looked like the size of a house. But once I was inside, it was more like the size of a football field. And I've heard a multitude in 40 years. I've heard more than I could count of people who have described essentially the same kind of thing, where sometimes they say they've gone into a small craft, you know, and then once they got inside of it, it was like a whole city inside. And so I think that's part of why when I began to have that realization some 30 years ago, when I first captured that first EVP and I heard that voice say, "Are the spirits listening?" And I had that epiphany that I was a spirit somewhere else and somebody somewhere was hearing me. And from then it just cascaded. And then I began to revisit old memories with a different way of thinking about them. And that's when I realized that thing in the backyard that night, that wasn't a spaceship or anything like that. I don't know what it was. I don't know what it was supposed to do, but I know damn sure that them six little kid sized people didn't go in there and play anywhere, because they'd all been right up on each other anyway. As my old man used to say, they'd have been elbows to assholes and there ain't nobody going to be steering nothing. So I don't know what it was, but, and then that led to my interest in the paranormal side of things and spirit, quote unquote, or whatever. I always use all those terms, ghost, spirit, everything. I always use them I use them because I can't think of a better way to describe them to make people understand, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's what I think they are. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Well, yeah. And like what you were talking about earlier, that video that you sent me of the guy talking about time, like I've thought about that a lot since I watched that. And that's one of those things like, yeah, let's discuss that, because it raises some interesting questions.
Exactly.
Because sure, the time overlap thing with the residual hauntings, okay, that kind of makes sense to me. Because one thing is, I think we leave energy impressions on all the space time that we exist in. Okay. So for something like that, especially in places like battlefields, where there's a lot of traumatic energy and emotional energy associated with the events that went on there, it kind of makes sense that there's a residue imprinted on time space that, you know, is real and that it overlaps, if you will, for lack of a better term. It doesn't really overlap. It's always there. And it's just that the difference between our time space and that time space, you know, breaks down or becomes, you know, more transparent. And then the events are perceived. And like you were talking about, some of them, you're just seeing the history happening again. And sometimes you see the history happening again and you can interact with it. Okay. So then you've got, okay, this is obviously my dead grandma who's haunting the house. Okay, no problem. There's no doubt about that. It's a spirit. Where are they? Why are they sticking around? Or why are they coming back through? Again, is it one of those that they're always there and they can come through or not? You know, right. And then you start talking about this aspect where this guy was a ghost hunter. And he's looking for ghosts and he runs into another ghost hunter in another time space.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, okay. If he was a ghost hunter, he was looking for a ghost. He ran into somebody that wasn't a ghost. They were alive and well in another time. And they were also a ghost hunter looking for a ghost. Okay. So if you think about it with what we know about ghosts, that doesn't make any sense. right?
Right.
It's like they neither of them were ghosts, but yet the same process connected them. They were both looking for the same thing in, and here's what I think is the most important part of this conversation, in the same space.
Yes.
Okay. So now that, to me, that says there are certain places where it's much easier to go back and forth across this time-space barrier than other places. So if we can figure out where those places are, we'll have a lot more fun with our toys going there.
Right. I know. And I think that we can figure that out. I mean, I think we've got it built into us to sense those things. And the more we're exposed to them, the more sensitive we become to it. This whole conversation reminds me of a conversation I had in my head last year or so ago. I don't know if I ever told you about it, Forrest, but you'll appreciate this, I think. I was awake. It was during the day and I was out for a walk and I was feeling kind of, I don't know, zen-ish. Really, my feet were, I was walking, I was connecting with nature. I was hypersensitive to the air on my face and the sun on me. And, you know, I was just in a spot. I was in a space in my head. And I heard a voice say, "Hey, Deb," a man, a male voice. It wasn't my voice. It was a man. And I turned around and looked because I thought somebody was walking up behind me on the street and there wasn't anybody there. But, you know, I've had this going on for a long time. So once I get over that initial, I usually go with it. Right. So I said, "Hey,
what's up?"
He said,
"Right."
Yeah.
He said, "Do you know that from where I am, you're just a little ball of light in the sky floating around in the dark? That's what I see. And that's what you are to me." But then he said, "When you see little balls of light floating around, that's me." He said, "But where I am, where I actually am, I look just like you. And, you know, live in a place just like you do. But from your perspective, I look like a little ball of light in the dark. And from my perspective, you look like a little ball of light in the dark." And I said, "Are you dead?" And he laughed and said, "No, I'm as alive as you are." And I said, "Well, are you alien?" And he just said, "No," like that. And then, boom, the conversation was over. Out of the blue.
How are you familiar with Robert Monroe's material and Joe McMonagall's material? Forget the name of the lady that also wrote a book that was working with them very closely, because they talk about multiplicity of our consciousness, that what we are right now, right here, is one focus of our consciousness, but that we actually could exist in four or five other existences at the same time. At the same time.
I feel that. I know what you mean, though. I feel that. Sometimes when I come to an intersection and I come to it when I'm driving and I come to an intersection and I stop, and just as I do, somebody runs the stop sign and I'm like, "Ooh, that was a close call." Immediately in my mind, I go, "Somewhere else I just got hit."
Like in another possibility.
Yeah. Somewhere else I just got hit. Don't think about it, and it won't happen here.
That's sort of like when you're talking about like high theoretical physics, time isn't real. Time's an illusion. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist. It's just our way of putting together a series of experiences so that they make sense in this focus of consciousness. But in reality, all possible occurrences exist simultaneously. And all we're doing is switching between one and another. And we've agreed to do it in a particular order so that it looks continuous and makes sense. But there's no reason you can't jump completely out of that scenario and go to some other scenario or some other reality.
Look at us here. We're talking about all this stuff. We go to UFOs and then we go right here to this.
Right. Well, you know what? We're trying to figure out what the hell's going on with all this stuff? And it all ties together. I mean,
it actually does. It really does. And I was going to want to ask you, I don't want to keep you really, you know, and wear you out, but I could talk to you for hours. But anyway, I do want to ask you, you know, with all this disclosure starting to happen with the government and all that stuff, whistleblowers coming out, things that I've seen that I never dreamed I would see 40 years ago, even though, you know, it still seems like a slow roll. It makes kind of sense to me in a way why it would be. But yet I feel like this, what we're talking about tonight, I think that they've already been talking about this in those skiffs. I think that this is something that's known and is connected with this UFO stuff. What are your thoughts on that?
Whenever you say that they're discussing it, who are you talking about?
The whistleblowers and the Congress, you know, that they're talking to in the skiffs and whatever the committees are that are quote unquote, you know, studying the UFO phenomenon and all that.
Well, and you say you think that they're talking about this kind of theoretical stuff that we're talking about?
Yes. I don't think they're talking about as much nuts and bolts stuff as people think they are. I think they've already skipped to the meat, and I think this is the meat. And I think that's why suddenly the brakes kind of seem to come on a little bit.
You mean on the disclosure movement?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I actually have a lot of thoughts on the disclosure movement.
I want to hear them.
Okay. And I'll try and keep it short, but you know, that's hard for me.
I got all night.
Okay. I'm with you. I'm just absolutely blown away and loving what's happening. It's like, we've been waiting for this our whole lifetime. Mm-hmm. I think this really is the beginning of real disclosure. And I've never said that before.
Yeah, okay. It feels different.
It does feel different. And that's one of the first questions that we need to be asking is why? Why now? Because I've always contended that the government is never going to tell us what they know until they have to. Okay? It's not their job. Their job isn't to scare the crap out of us, right? It's to keep us safe and happy so we can buy, you know, another
and money.
TV and a hot tub and go to Branson when we want to, right? That's their job. Their job isn't to go, oh, by the way, there's these weird, powerful, and super intelligent alien beings coming here to Earth, and they have been for a long time. We don't know who they are, what they're up to, or how to recreate their technology. Sleep tight.
Yeah. Right?
It's like they're not going to do that. Okay. Yeah. So I've always contended that they're not going to fess up to the reality of this subject until they have to. Mm-hmm. So if my theory is correct, okay, then what changed? Why do they feel like they have to tell us now? Because they're doing it in a very official way, in a very controlled release of information. Stuff that could never make it to the public eye before. You know how hard it would be to get gun camera footage from a fighter pilot?
Yes.
Fighter pilots can't even get that.
No. Right?
So it's like, okay, and that information was magically released to five news agencies on the same day. Oh, okay. You know, God love Lou Elizondo. He started this whole thing. There is a movement happening, and there's players afoot. There are more whistleblowers lined up to come forward with more information. Okay, it's happening. But there's always going to be pushback. There's always going to be a faction of our government and other governments of the world that do not want anybody to know about this information. They want to control it. So a lot has come out, and now you're seeing a pushback. Okay. People who came out and went, wow, this is really cool. Let's talk about it. And now they're going, oh, no, this is a bunch of crap, you know. And so we're getting that backwash. And I think that'll go on for a little while. And then there'll be another wave of information. And I think that what they're trying to do is get us ready for open contact. Because up until now, there's tons of evidence out there, but it's still, unless you experience it yourself, you don't know if it's real for sure. It could all be fake, right?
Oh, absolutely. I never expect anybody to believe anything I tell them. I just tell them what I know, and then they just kind of figure it out.
So what, you know, until there is the proverbial landing on the White House lawn kind of thing. I mean, that's corny, but, you know, that's what we're talking about. Some gigantic public event that cannot be ignored or denied or explained away. Open contact. Now, yeah, we've been in contact with aliens for a long, 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 long time. Maybe they've been here all along for tens of thousands of years, right? But everybody doesn't embrace that until that big event happens. And I think that's what they're trying to get us ready for. And I think they know when it's going to happen. And the time, the clock is ticking. And so they've got to get the general public, the world ready for this event so that everything doesn't collapse when it happens.
Because it will definitely have a major impact on religion, for one.
Oh, sure. Yep. It'll have a direct impact on a lot of things. But yeah, religions are either going to get on board or topple. Mm-hmm. You know, there's kind of no two ways for that. So it'll be interesting to see who gets on
finance. You know, people will be like, oh, the aliens are coming. Screw it. I'm going to max out my credit card. I don't give a shit. We're all going to die. So.
Right. I don't need aliens coming to do that. I can max out a credit card right now.
Yeah. I got kids and dogs. Expensive dogs.
Right. Thanks to you guys, I've got the website for Ghost Stop now. So thanks.
Sorry.
Right.
I just told him all. I gave him all those websites, so I was hoping he'd get that stuff so I can come play with his toy.
I don't have a credit card, but.
Hey, look, I bought a bunch of stuff when I was working. You know, I figured, hey, it's my money and I wanted it to. Now I gave a lot of it away because I wasn't investigating anymore.
Yeah. So anyway, as far as disclosure is concerned, that's what I think is really going on. So I think that you're going to see this go back and forth. Information is going to come out. It'll go quiet for a while. Information will come out. It's going to go quiet. Right now, I think it's going to stay quiet until after the election. That's just my feeling. I don't think any of the candidates are going to jump on.
No.
Okay. If they do, it'll make it more interesting. Okay.
But it'll definitely be interesting.
I think they're like, oh, no, I don't want to touch this. No. So the election's going to happen. And then after that, then there'll be some more stuff start to come out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like with David Grush coming forward, man, that's like, this isn't just, oh, we're seeing weird stuff. We don't know what it is. That's how it started, right? No, it's like, no, man, we got bodies. We got craft. We know all about it.
Exactly.
Oh, man, you know.
And I've got video clips of congressmen coming out after they had the meeting in the SCIF and people interviewing them and then making comments about interdimensional stuff and things that will blow your mind, you know, and then they look shook. They legitimately look shook.
Right. Well, I don't think there's any doubt that they know about this stuff, about portals and about interdimensional, you know, travel and about shape-shifting and perception altering and all of that kind of stuff. How much of it we figured out how to do, you know, I don't know that the answer to that. I think we figured out how to make the propulsion systems, at least to some extent. And I think some of the things that are flying around are ours.
Yeah.
I don't know that's true of like the Tic Tacs, but I'm just saying some of these triangles we're seeing, I think they're ours.
My attitude is if it's got flashing lights on it anywhere, it's somebody's here. It's ours.
Well, yeah.
UFOs don't need lights.
Yeah. I think it was Bruce Maccabee said that to me one time. He says, why would alien ships have flashing lights? You know, well, because they want us to look at them, you know. So, yeah, it's just it's that kind of, you know, prosaic thinking that you have to really look at this thing right. You can't go, oh, that thing's weird. Yeah, well, it's not that weird.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen things flying around, like hovering and moving slowly with just a bright blue light. Guess what that was? It was a military helicopter flying night maneuvers. Well, they don't turn on the regular lights, because if you were flying in combat, they would turn all the lights off.
Right.
But they want the ground crew to be able to visually track the helicopter as well as tracking it on radar. So they put up a bright blue light on the bottom of the, like an incandescent blue light on the bottom of the helicopter, so that they can see it, but it's still completely dark as it's, you know, flying around. Well, most people don't know that.
Yeah, I lived real close to the Hilltop MOA here that's attached to Grissom Air Base, and they do a lot of training out that way. And I've seen some strange looking stuff in the sky, but it's 100%, I'm sure it comes from Grissom. So,
sure. Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. Well, have you noticed? I'm sure you have. This is a silly question. That lately, within the last couple of years, everybody's talking about portals.
Yes.
Everybody's talking about portals. Mm-hmm. And people are coming forward with videos of portals and
yes.
all this kind of stuff. And it's like, this is awesome.
It's like it was leaked into the psyche of humanity, and it's kind of made its way through our minds, you know, where the people are beginning to wake up and realize them and recognize them. Yeah, I'm seeing TikTok videos of the portal that allegedly opened up at that shopping mall down in Florida, other portal videos on there, which a lot of those videos there's some real bad Photoshop work going on there for sure. But the fact that they're even thinking about it, because my attitude is, you know, if you can think it exists somewhere, and that our thoughts are powerful, then we can manifest these things by the way we think about it. And so more and more people are thinking about it. That tells me they're coming if they're not already here. You know what I'm saying?
Right. It's just, I think it's interesting that people are sort of finally talking about that more. And when I say people, I even mean like UFO researchers.
Yeah.
Haven't really been talking about that publicly much over the years, but you know, it's kind of always been out there lurking around in the phenomenon.
Yeah. Like Walt Anders didn't want to meet me or talk to me or investigate my case back in the 80s. They didn't want to have anything to do with anybody who actually saw any kind of entity at any time. So that changed.
Oh my God. It's like, and I love Walt to death. But I had so many arguments with that man over the years. And I remember when the Billy Meyer case first came out, right? Mm-hmm. And I saw the coffee table book in the bookstore, and I was like, oh my God, what's going on with that? I hadn't heard anything about it. And I saw this book and I bought one. And then I started finding out more about it. And eventually I came to the conclusion that this is real. This is a real case. Okay. And I was someplace at a conference or whatever that Walt was at. And so I sat down and I go, Walt, what do you think about those Billy Meyer photographs? Because they're some of the best photographs ever, you know. And he goes, oh, I says, that's not real. And I go, you know, I've talked to a lot of people, including Wendell Stevens and a bunch of other people. And I've looked at the evidence and I think it is real, Walt. And he goes, no, it's not real. And I go, well, why do you say that? Come on. Give me a good argument. And he goes, it's too good to be true. I'm like, oh man, no, not you, Walt. You can't say that.
The whole big head cheese of MUFON.
God. Yeah.
Yeah. That their attitude has changed too, though. I mean, they've got that whole experiencer research team. I'm not involved with them anymore. I haven't been a MUFON investigator for 15 years, at least 10 years.
I haven't either. I think the last time I actually paid dues was about 2003. And then when Walt was still alive, he kept giving me a free membership every year and sending me the sky look and, you know, and so I'm like, okay. And that went on for about, well, I guess until he died. And then I lost my free membership, you know, but I was like, I haven't held an office or done any work with them in a long time. And whenever Bigelow got involved with them and a couple of other people that came after that, I just did not like the direction they were going.
No.
It was such a shame because it was such a big and wonderful organization. Mm-hmm. And I hope that they climb back on top of, you know, being good again.
They have some good people that that are associated. There's still a lot of good people that work in there. So I hope it succeeds and overcomes whatever troubles it's had. But
Well, the problems with that organization have nothing to do with the people who are actually doing the investigations. Mm-hmm. It's at the top.
Yep.
You know,
it's always at the top.
Yep.
Oh, well, anyways, I'm so glad you were able to come here with us this evening. And I know I've talked your ear off. I've been running my mouth. Greg hadn't already got to say two words. He's used to
it. I opened my mouth and I was like, no, you shall not talk.
I'm sorry, buddy. I just love Forrest so much. We got history. Me and you got history. Me and Forrest
but
got
we- We need to set up something where we can get you down here and then get over there to Forrest.
Oh, yeah, man. The three of us will be like the trifecta of weirdos. It'll be awesome. The energy will bring.
It will. It will. It's like you guys are the kind of folks I like to hang out with.
You've always been the kind of folk I like to hang out with. And I'll bring my flute with me when we come.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I don't know that I'm letting you bring the flute into the car.
Shut up.
Did she play it the whole way somewhere?
She will. She will.
I don't know.
She'd be like, oh, hey, Greg, check this out.
I'm telling you, it's in my DNA. And I've had the 23andMe and the Ancestry DNA now. And I have a lot of everything. I have a lot of everything. Let me just put it this way. But I also have 0.3% Native American, one of them says. And then the other one says Mesopotamian, Iranian. I mean, I got weird stuff in my genetic DNA. And I swear to God that the Native American stuff is still, you know, triggers something in me. So...
Well, Debbie, I did the genetic testing too a couple of years back, and mainly because, like, you know, I my ancient heritage is Scottish, right? And so, like, I embrace that. I've got three kilts. I march in parades. I go to Highland games all over the place. I drink Scotch. You know, Scotch ale is one of my favorites to make and drink. And anyway, and so one day my wife goes, how do you know you're even Scottish? And I'm like, Crawford is like a really strong old Scottish name. And she goes, yeah, but right. You know, there's all marriages and name changes. And how do you even know you're Scottish? Right. She has a tough job keeping me honest, but that's what she does. Right. So I go, okay, well, I'll take the test. And so I did. Guess what? 25% Scottish. And the Crawford clan was formed by a Viking. And I'm like another large percent Viking, basically.
I've got Norwegian.
Yeah.
In
well, yeah, that's it. It doesn't say Viking. It's Norwegia.
My Norwegian. Most of it's German and French. That's
well, I got some German on my grandma's side, and I got some Irish in there. But yeah, it turns out I'm the exact right amount of Scottish that I should be. Right.
Good.
But I don't have a drop of Native American in me, which is a shame because you know how I feel about Native American.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah. And if you want to end this on a waxing really weird note, I'm pretty sure that I lived several lifetimes as a Native American. If it wasn't, you know, something that would be obvious in this arena of conversation, I don't believe we live one lifetime. You know, we go on and live more lifetimes. We've had lifetimes, and I have some memories, and I've had some experiences that lead me to believe that I lived at least one or two lifetimes as a Native American.
Oh, I'm right there with you. You already know.
And I got some weird stories to go with that.
Well, then you're going to have to come back.
Did
we're going to have to talk about that.
Yeah, that's a whole nother bailiwick, but I'll next time I'll tell you the whole story of Blue Feather.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
it's some weird stuff.
I love weird.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of where we roll.
Yep.
Yep.
That's our wheelhouse. Right. All right. So we're coming down to the bottom of the hour here on Midwest Prayer Talk Radio. We want to thank Forrest for coming out and talking to us again. He will be back and he'll tell us the Blue Feather story. And we'll get to talking about some equipment, because I want to know what kind of equipment that you actually picked up and what you played with, and kind of got a hand on. And if you have any questions or anything, and we'll be here to answer those for you, because I like gadgets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do too. And I may need to talk to you before next week, because I'm going to Eureka Springs. I guarantee you I'm going to with all these toys to the Crescent.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, right now I'm reading instruction books with these things to try and make sure I know, how to use them. And so especially afterwards, I'm going to have a bunch of recordings. Mm-hmm. And I will need some help learning how to analyze them and what I need to do with that. So down there, I'm just going to be, getting as much, on camera and on tape as I can.
Well, we're your people, so if you need help, you just let us know.
And I, you can even, if you can upload me files somewhere, I can even help you review some. I'm going to hopefully help Greg with some here before long. That's one of my favorite things to do, is to review the evidence. I got a good ear and a good eye.
Right.
I will be leaning on you guys for some help.
Well,
sure.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being with us. I love
you. Yep, I love hanging out with you guys. So anytime.
Right on.
All right. All right. Well, we'll talk to you soon, Forrest. You guys, remember, you can go over to youtube.com/@MidwestParaTalk Radio. Check out the videos we have over there on the site. You can also go to MidwestParaTalkRadio.com. Check out the website there. You can reach out to us there. Deb's homepage is out there. Debshome.com. You can go and check out her book and all the stories that she has out there on her website. Let's see what else is on their website. You could go to bipspara.org. That's Boonville, Indiana Paranormal Society. That's my group. And you guys can go out there and check out their website. There's a lot of cool information going on there, and working towards TAP family membership. So,
and if you can get to the Ozark Mountain UFO conference next weekend, you will be glad you did.
For sure. All right, you guys, remember, check us next Thursday night, 9 East, 8 Central, here on the Midwest Paratalk Radio Network.